After a relatively slow Monday in the sports world, we're back at it on Tuesday. NBA playoffs resume. Game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll break down Pacers and Celtics from the point spread, the total, props, series outlook as well. A lot of fun stuff to dissect there. Also, the WNBA, three games, including a double-digit spread, and we'll also hit the diamond, and so will Arthur, going for the red crown. All that and much more. Mariah's in the house. Come join us.
We are talking marquee matchups in the NBA. The Eastern Conference Finals are upon us, and it may not be a matchup we previously anticipated. It's the Celtics, which we anticipated, and the Pacers, which was kind of up in the air, but the Celtics favored by 10 at home for game one. Is this the right number?
I think it's a little high. It feels high. You're our resident Boston native and Celtics fan, but this Pacers team can hang with Boston, but there's times where Celtics just go on these runs and the Pacers play zero defense. That's the biggest concern here. This Knicks team, which, you know, Brunson nicked up, a few role players. DiVincenzo's better than a role player, but the gist of it is this was a very undermanned New York team, and they scored at will. Now, give Brunson credit. He made some great shots and impressive shots, but Boston will have open threes all day. All day, and they're just going to make them. And I know no Porzingis, at least for the early part of the series. We just have to be careful. What we last saw was the Pacers shooting 67.1% in a game seven. So we're talking all-time numbers here. That's just not going to carry over. It is interesting, though, that Rick Carlisle, he made adjustments throughout the next series. And a lot of times coaches get so married to their pregame or, you know, pre-flop routine, but he pressured full court because they were undermanned. And I think he's going to go out and hunt Horford. I think without Porzingis, he's going to just hunt him and put him in a bunch of pick and rolls and things like that. I just wonder if it's enough. So it feels a little high, but I'm not really ready to jump on the Pacers either. So maybe the number's not too high, right? If I'm not ready to pull the trigger.
Now, you mentioned the defense optional part on the Pacers half, but the total is 222. Is this an over?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. I'm going to play a lot of overs, whether it be first half games throughout the series. We're talking about the top two teams in terms of scoring in the NBA. And then you have Boston's got a good defense, but Indiana pushes the pace so much, and they want to score before you get set. And then Halliburton's, you know, obviously changed a little bit more aggressive with the shooting and offense first point guard. But the Celtics' Achilles heel, and I know this is frustrating for their fan base, is they get sort of bogged down at offense at times. They just, you know, bounce the ball, take the air of the ball, and do these isolation plays. But the pace of Indiana is going to actually help them kind of avoid that sort of kryptonite. And I like the situation that Boston's just going to get runs at the rim and then a bunch of open threes. They overpass perfectly. I think it's a really good matchup for Boston. Now, obviously, they would have rather faced the Knicks given how undermanned they were. But it's worth mentioning during the regular season, Indiana won three of the five regular season meetings. And in the in-season tournament, that big game, they won to end up coming out to Vegas. I wonder if this could just, well, so I like the overs to answer your question, but I do think the one kind of question for the Celtics, we hear this often, is can they win tight games, right? They only played one game. That was the thing. They're almost getting punished, beating the brains out of everyone.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. They get a little lax. They'll take their foot off the gas when they just feel like they're above their opponent. And it seems to kind of get them time around. If we look at the Cleveland series, I mean, they should have been blowouts.
Right.
And they weren't, and they didn't even have Donovan Mitchell.
Right. And then they were like reprimanded for having sort of a tight game. I think only one of those games was decided by single digits. I'll say this about the turnaround from game seven to game one. I tweeted that if the Knicks somehow won that game, they'd lose by 50 on Tuesday. But I think the Pacers will be fine. They went deep off the bench. They'll be fine. It is consecutive road games and things like that, but they are also elite athletes. I don't think it catches up with them. I could be wrong. I just think Boston's better. Something to consider also is Boston in the first half. They're like 68, 69% this season against the first half line. It's pretty crazy. So that's something I'm weighing. But for now, I'm just officially playing the over. I think we're going to see a lot of points. Celtics team total also does interest me. I'm more confident that they're going to score. And Pacers may have trouble with Boston's stingy defense. We shall see. But I think Boston's going to light up the scoreboard.
Okay, so looking for a high-scoring matchup in Game 1 as the Pacers take on the Celtics. Looking to the over for this marquee matchup. It's time for our favorite game, Tail or Bail. I'm going to throw out a betting trend. Doug's going to tell us if it's actionable or if we should just bail on it. So looking to the MLB, the Phillies are off to a hot start, the hottest start in baseball. They've won all 9 Ranger Suarez starts. 8 of 9 have been by 2 or more runs. He's got a 1.37 ERA. His whip is under 1, well under 1. And now Ranger is facing the Rangers. And the Phillies are priced at minus 160. Do we tail this team?
I think so. Yeah. I think you have to. Anytime you're 34-14, yeah. Phillies have been on a roll. That's even with losing Trey Turner to injury and things along those lines. I love what they're doing. And then Suarez has been excellent. You mentioned the pitching stats. It's incredible. And I think if you don't want to lay this type of price at $1.60 or so, then you can certainly lay the run line. You mentioned it. Eight of those nine wins have come by 2 or more runs. And we've seen some pitchers come out of nowhere. Suarez right now in the range of 7th in terms of the favorite status of the NL Cy Young race. So he's in the discussion. We kind of were ahead of the curve on Imanaga of the Cubs and even Javier Assad of the Cubs. These guys, you know, they're not household names, the DeGroms of the world. Some of them throwing out their elbows. And there's a huge wave of young guys as well, all these young pitchers shining. Obviously, we know about Skeeds with the Pirates. But I don't think there's any reason to get off the Phillies. Like, what are you afraid of, just being late to the party? I guess that's a concern. But newsflash, if you don't tail this and you bet another game, you can lose that bet as well. Like, there is an element of risk in all this. And I think you just kind of have to roll with it. And I personally don't have a huge appetite for laying 160. I hate laying the run line and then the team wins by 1, but usually I'm okay with it. So I would lay the run line here with the Phils. I think Suarez and then this lineup gets it done. They have a great, great just like vibe going on, and I want to keep backing it.
Yeah. All right. So tailing the red hot Phillies as they take on the Rangers. We are hitting the hardwood with a little fast break in the WNBA. The season is underway, and there's a 3-game slate for us on Tuesday. Let's start with the Phoenix Mercury at the Las Vegas Aces. It's a rematch of opening night where at times it did not look so great for Vegas, which was shocking because I went into that game being like, this is going to be a blowout. I'm done after the first quarter. But the Aces favored by 15 in this matchup, the total 171.5.
So championship banner ring night has always been sort of a tough emotional night for any defending champ to kind of handle on opening. I mean, what do they really care? Like you said, huge favorites. They got there, they won, and that's all they really care about. The next game, they were favored by 19.5, and it was like a single digit win. Right. They don't have Chelsea Gray. Is she supposed to play? Do we know what her status is yet?
So we don't have her status yet. Part of me feels like she's rehabbing until the Olympics. Because she is expected to make the roster. I don't know if that's up in the air now that she's still rehabbing that lower left leg injury. But from what I've seen without Chelsea Gray, they're really leaning into their rotation a lot more. Like this last season, you were watching the same 5 players the entire game. This time, there are a lot of substitutions going. They're really relying on their depth this season, which I think is why these games have been closer than expected.
So Becky Hammon's using these huge mismatches to just grow her roster, so some of the role players.
Yeah, that was their biggest goal coming into the season, is adding that depth because of the Olympic break. They're expected to have up to 5 players going overseas, which is a lot. So, and it's obviously all their best players. So it's really about building their depth and getting them used to it. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing, is these growing pains of this new roster and these new rotations that they're putting in.
There's a lot to like with this Phoenix team. I was actually definitely firm on their over for win total until Brittney Griner got hurt. She's out for a couple weeks. I love just who they have around her, but they're real thin in the middle. And I think Asia is going to go off again like she did opening night. We have to also remember that the Mercury shot 15 of 36 from downtown.
Diana Taurasi was on one.
Whereas the Aces only shot 21% from three. So that was the big difference. Are the threes going to likely happen because the Aces were playing lackadaisical defense, or is it they're going to come back to earth, they being the Mercury? For me, it's Mercury or pass. I think you raised that's really good, like, gambling info you shared. The fact that they're just, like, they're not in, like, gung-ho mode and they're going to be playing but they have those, they can go on these 9-0 runs, right, and Asia can just score at will against whatever limited front court there is for Phoenix. So I would look to the dog here plus the points. That's the only way I would play it. But definitely looking into some props with Asia Wilson overs. I think her rebounds, her points over. She's going to – but you're right. Like, Taurasi lives for these, especially these young ends that are role players. Like, she can carve them up on the perimeter with, you know, rejecting the screen and having an open three. For me, it's underdog or pass. But Kalia Copper's been a big part of the Mercury's offense. Not a gunner, but she's, like, scoring. So I think her overs are kind of easy money as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you there. All right, next up, we got the Wings at the Dream. Dallas, it's early, but they're still not really in their full season shape. The Dream are favored by 4.5 at home with the total at 166.
Yeah, it's going to be a long season for Dallas. Obviously, we knew going into the season, Satu Sabalu is their best player, in my opinion, that she's going to be out until maybe even after the Olympics. And then, you know, what, one or two games into the season, Tasha Howard got hurt. So she's going to be out a while. They got, I mean, Arike Ogunbowale, I'm not her biggest fan. Obviously, she's an all-star, but I think she's just a gunner. She went for 35 in the last game because they don't have any. That's Tierra McCowan's their big, tall center, and she's excellent, but they're limited. And I think Atlanta has so much depth. I think they really play well off each other. They score it well. They push the pace. I'm laying it with Atlanta. I think they're kind of an underrated team this season for sure.
Oh, no question. All right, last but not least, the Mystics at the Sparks. I guess maybe least, but Mystics at the Sparks. Neither of these teams have recorded a win yet. Again, we're only a few games into the season. LA is favored by 3.5 of the total at 158.5.
Yeah, they're part of the Paige Becker sweepstakes in this one. And I think there will be tanking at the end of the season. I don't think early in the year, but these games, these matchup with two teams that are expected to be among the worst, it's a big thing. So there's two real big things, one for each team. One is Kurt Miller's the coach of LA. He's maybe the best, second best, third best coach in the W with Becky Hammon. He's an awesome coach. He makes sort of, you know, lemonade out of lemons, and he did well last year, and he pulled games out of nowhere. But he also had Nneka Ogumike last year. This year, I think Clarendon had a triple-double in the opener. So between her and Hamby, he has like a 1-2 punch that you wouldn't think. So he's making it happen, and I think the team's going to get a lot better. So I would lean to the Sparks because Washington's without Sykes, who's one of my favorite players, a great guard, fills up the stat sheet. And then Shakira Austin's day-to-day, she was already on a minutes count. I think she missed the last game. So if she's out, I'm going to hammer the Sparks. She's so good, Shakira Austin. She played for Ole Miss. She was, all rookie, first team, things like that. So she's just on a minutes count and not healthy yet. So if she's out, that's a big blow to the already a limited Washington team. But the coaching mismatch here really favors LA. So I hate laying points with this bad team.
Yeah.
But I think you have to.
Right.
And I don't think the tanking's going to happen until the end of the season.
Yeah, they certainly have time. Okay, well, there you have it. Three games, three plays for your WNBA slate. We are given props in the NBA, taking a look at the prop market ahead of the Eastern Conference Finals Game 1 matchup between the Celtics and the Pacers. And looking at these player prop point totals, we got Tatum leading the way at 29.5, followed by Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Drew Holiday, Al Horford, you know, the usual suspects. But what jumps out to you about these point totals?
I'm very curious to see how Indiana defends Boston, because what makes the Celtics so potent, and even without Porzingis, is that everyone can make a three, even Horford. And so the ball pops around and it finds the open hand. And against this Indiana defense, there will be open guys. And so while you think in the conventional NBA, so everything runs through Tatum, isolate, that's not sort of the Boston offense. Now, Tatum against the Pacers, just because we had such high scoring games, he was 30 or above, I think, in every game, but he was right around 30, 32. And if the regular season's any indication, Jaylen Brown had a 40-point game. Like, he ate against this team. I would play Brown over because I think all these guys are going to be able to score. And I like Brown's ability to attack the rack. He's his physicality. Now, he always says dribbling's his issue, but he should be fine attacking. It's going to be fascinating to see who Nesmith guards. Nesmith was who Rick Carlisle put on Jalen Brunson. They made him pick him up full court. And Nesmith's former Celtic, never quite got a real chance to play. So he always steps up his game when he faces Boston. I think he'll be on Tatum to start. So that's why I think Brown can go off. But all these guys, they can go over or they can go under because it's all three-pointers. And if you believe in, you know, just the mean, I would bet almost all starters over. I would really consider that. Tatum probably not, just because the number's so high, 29.5. But I wouldn't blame anyone for betting the other four starters over and just hope to go 3-1. I mean, there's a better chance going 3-1 than 1-3.
All right. And looking at the other side of the ball, obviously you got Halliburton, you got Siakam. What's standing out to you there?
So Indiana changed the way it plays in the series against the Knicks because New York was so undermanned. They picked up full court and then just constantly you see Carlisle after make just like waving them to go because the Knicks didn't have the depth to maintain, and then they just sort of was a war of attrition for New York and they ran them into the ground. I don't know if the Pacers are always going to push pace for sure, but I don't think there is over the top pushing because Boston has such a good defense and they have reserves to play unlike New York. I would side with Halliburton under. The problem is he did shoot a bunch of threes the latter part of the series and things like that, and he had some big games against Boston in the regular season, so I would lean to the under of 20.5. Siakam, I think, is probably my favorite. I would play that under. I think he gets sort of lost out there with the three-point happy offense of Indiana, and they're willing to, like, find the open man. Like, they're okay with Nebhard shooting open jumpers and threes, Miles Turner and all these guys, so they don't really run the offense through Siakam like maybe another team would with their star post player. It's really just the ball finds the open guy, kind of like Boston. So I would play Siakam under, and for Halliburton, I lean under to his points.
Well, you mentioned Halliburton threes. There is an option to bet on the series leader in total threes made, and Halliburton is the outright favorite at minus 120. Then Derek White with the second shortest odds, which makes me so happy, at plus 175. Then you got Jason Tatum, Miles Turner. Is Halliburton the play here?
I think so because the Celtics will just be so erratic. I'll tell you who's not the play, I don't think, is Tatum. I mean,
yeah,
he was like 2 of 8, 2 of 7 in every game in the left. So he hadn't made over 2 threes in any playoff game until the last game. So he was so happy. He hit that third one like late fourth quarter. So it was kind of a thing that the prop market was always 2.5, and he went under every single game, the first whatever it was, 9 games of the playoffs, and then he finally went over. I mean, Derek White is tempting with that payout and the fact that he shoots like 8 threes a game. And I think what's going to happen is Derek White will have like 3 or 4 in one game, then 1, then 5. And then you just have to hope Halliburton, if you bet that, 3 across the board. So I would look at Halliburton, White, or actually I think Jaylen Brown at 40-1 is tempting. Again, 40-1. I don't think the volume is going to be there because he drives so much, but it crossed my mind. I would probably play Halliburton at minus 120, but I don't think it's a good enough play. I think maybe like a plus 110, I would definitely play it. So the minus 120 is scaring me away just because I think there's games where he's not going to make that many, and that's what all Boston's going to do. They're going to shoot 43s a game, but it's a fun prop because it's like 1 versus like 7 guys, because I don't think Miles Turner is going to do it. I don't think any of those guys. So in terms of the other Indiana guys, maybe I'll come around eventually, pull the trigger on Halliburton.
Okay, so there you have it. A plethora of props to choose from ahead of the Eastern Conference Finals Game 1 between the Celtics and the Pacers. It's time for the futures. Now we are looking at the futures market ahead of Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA between the Celtics and the Pacers. And just looking at this series, how it's priced out, Boston is favored at minus 900, Indiana plus 600. What do we make of this Eastern Conference Finals pricing?
You know, it's hard to think the line's too high. There, one book in the market had minus 1250. I mean, you factor in Boston being a 10-point favorite in Game 1. What's the line going to go to if they win Game 1? And then they're going to get Porzingis back in Game 3, maybe. So what they do is they just factor in what the home line is, and then the away line. Boston's going to be favored on paper in Indiana, and they'll obviously be dealt with, you know, around 10 at home. I think there's probably value at minus 900, but this Pacers team's a lot better than we've seen. Like, they're not like this fluke team that reached the conference finals. We've seen teams like the Hawks in recent years get the conference finals. The really young Celtics, when they had like Isaiah Thomas and stuff, those teams were not really, you know, didn't have a 1-2 punch like they do with Halliburton and Siakam. And they're very well coached. They're deep. They have guys that can like make big plays, like Nesmith, McConnell, even Miles Turner. I mean, they have players. It's just Boston is so good. It comes down to, is Boston beatable 4 out of 7 games? Probably not. But the question is, do you take it? Is there a better way to play the minus 900? So one way is just play the Celtics to win the title. You can get them at varying prices, but we're looking at like a minus $1.50, sort of the consensus right now. This is why last round I said grab plus 105 when it looked like Denver would be eliminated, because I thought they'd be just sizable favorites. I talked to an odds maker, and he said if Minnesota and Boston both advance, because they're both favored in the conference finals, and both teams healthy, let's say Porzingis comes back, he's healthy, and then both teams avoid it, Boston would be about a minus $3 favorite. And everyone's like, that seems so high. But if you look at what they are, they'd be like a 6.5-point favorite at home, maybe 1.5 in Minneapolis. So maybe you just want to take minus 150, think it's more a mere formality against the Pacers, and then you're sitting there with a really good ticket at minus 150 in the NBA final. Now, that's putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but you do have to absorb some risk when you're trying to avoid minus 900 and then, you know, take a leap of faith on certain things.
I know there's also other ways to bet if you're interested in the Celtics or even the Pacers in this series. We've talked about exactas before. Is that kind of the route to take?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we've seen Boston lose game two each of the past two rounds.
They love game two.
A double-digit favorite. And I'm really kind of fascinated with how Indiana's going to be able to try to maintain scoring against their own defense, which gives up so many. But I think you can safely play minus 1.5 games with heavy juice. So as long as you avoid a game seven, Boston wins, you're good. I think you got to factor in that crowd's pretty good in Indianapolis. And, you know, it'll be a much different situation than Boston having to play Cleveland without Mitchell for a few games. Round one without Miami without Jimmy Butler. I mean, this is like a real team now that they're playing. I would say, you know, you can do exact outcomes like you mentioned. So there's a couple options. If you think 4-1 gets it done, that's tempting, right? You can escape with a plus 190. And then, you know, you got something to play with. Like if they're up 3-1, you can play out of that. Or if it's 3-0, whatever, you have positions. I would say you can just do straight under 5.5 games or, you know, Boston minus 2.5. If you do Boston minus 2.5 games, they basically have to, you know, win on a spread of the game. So Indiana cannot win two games. That's a pretty good play. The juice is higher than, you know, in other markets. Sometimes in earlier rounds, it's like even money or minus 110 in that situation. Obviously, Boston is perceived as a mismatch. But I would play, I think, the minus 1.5 is like a fine play. Like, it's not a great play, but I can see. Because while the Pacers may make some runs and they could eke out a win, like, over four quarters, their defense should give up just too many points.
Okay, so multiple ways that you can play this. Go with your gut on that one, but if it's more tempting to just bet the finals winner, go that route too. But either way, the future's now in the NBA. All right, it's time for King Arthur's Court. We got King Arthur in the house, rocking the white crown because he's on a two-game here. We'll see if he can make it three. And what is his dog of the day?
Yeah, he's done a little bit of everything. He's gone to the W. He's gone the octagon a little bit. He's, you know, not afraid. He's open-minded with all his plays. And he's going to the baseball diamond because friend of the show, little do they know, Logan Webb is on the bump. And what does that mean, Logan Webb? Well, more than any other pitcher, his splits are just such a stark contrast between home and away. He finished runner-up in the Cy Young last year because he was okay on the road last year, but look at his ERA this year in the neighborhood of 6. And the Giants are at the Pirates, San Francisco, a road favorite. So Arthur's going to take the home dog here with the Buccos. And not that he loves Martin Perez, but I think just the fact that Logan Webb gets so roughed up, he's willing to fade him and take the plus money.
I think Arthur and I are both baffled by him just even being a starter on the road at this point. Why that's even, just let's move the rotation around a little bit so he just doesn't start on the road anymore. But all right, I like it. I like it. All right, Arthur.
He's one away from the Red Crown. So
one away. We'll see if next time around we're breaking out the Red Crown or if we're back to the bottom. But Arthur is riding with the Pirates.